please welcome the final speaker for the opposition, Reverend Thomas E. Smith.
Thank you, and good evening. Could school vouchers improve the quality of education in our state? Certainly the possibility exists, but for whom and at what price? Thomas Jefferson was convinced that democracy can be effective only in the hands of an enlightened people. He offered Virginia's lawmakers a plan in 1779 to educate school children at public cost. When Jefferson died in 1826, the nation stood on the threshold of a stupendous transformation. During the ensuing quarter century, it expanded economically, enormously in space and in population. Old cities grew larger and new ones even more numerous. The era saw the coming of the steamboat and the river railroad. Commerce flourished, and so did agriculture. The age witnessed the rise of the common man with the right to vote and to hold office. It was a time of overflowing optimism, of dreams, of perpetual progress, moral uplift, and social betterment. Our nation was growing toward those ideals which gave every man hope of a better tomorrow. Such was the climate that engendered the common school, open freely to every child and upheld by public funds. It was to be a lay institution under the sovereignty of the state, the archetype of the present-day American public school. Bringing common school into being was not easy. Against it fought the doctrine that any education which excluded religious instruction was godless. Nor had there been any great recession of the contention that education was not a proper government function, and for a state to engage therein was an intrusion into parental privilege. Still more distasteful was the fact that public schooling would occasion a rise in taxes. Nevertheless, Massachusetts, followed by Connecticut, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, and New York, mustered support for state board of education. Administered locally everywhere, schooling of the United States masters in a republic younger days was immensely diverse. In New England, primarily schooling enjoyed public support. In the South, apart from supplying meager learning to pauper children, the state abstained from educational responsibility. In the middle states, elementary schools were sometimes public. More often, they were parochial or supported by philanthropic interests. Only beyond the Alleghenies were there any federal provisions for education. Time will not permit me to fully develop the historical perspective, but I want to suggest that much of the thinking of the proponents of school vouchers is deeply rooted in the opposition to public school education and to the protection of privilege, religious preference, parental rights, states' rights, and the protection of power, control of decisions affecting major institutions, funding, and taxes, to the detriment of the common good. The concept of giving parents a voucher which can be used at any school, public or private, to educate their children seems on the surface to be a sound idea. Public schools are not doing a good job of educating our children, and not everyone can afford to send their children to a private school that may be able to provide a higher quality of education. Why not give all parents a voucher and let them choose where their children will go to school? The free market system will do its work, and the mediocre schools will be forced to close, and the better schools will flourish. Unfortunately, the free market system could prove to be a fatal flaw in the school voucher plan because the voucher system addresses only how education is funded and not how it is designed. Consider this. If vouchers are given to all students, thus making a private school education available to all students, it is presumed that parents will naturally want to place their children in the best available schools. This will cause the best schools to be overwhelmed with applications for enrollment. How are schools with excellent reputations and limited facilities to decide which students will be accepted for enrollment? One way would be for the school to set minimum enrollment requirements and test students prior to enrollment. This would allow the school to select only the best students for enrollment. But isn't the idea of vouchers to allow parents to select the school rather than schools select a student. Maybe another way might be for schools to accept all students who apply and just make do with existing facilities until more can be built. This is a model of our current public system and would result in the same kind of overcrowded and substandard educational environment that vouchers are supposed to improve upon. A third way is to select students and control student population would be for more desirable schools to charge more than the voucher's worth. Only those who could afford the extra could attend the better schools. This is the situation we have now with private schools and universities. The net effect of this scenario is to shift already scarce funding from public schools to private schools while leaving poor students stranded in substandard, underfunded public schools. The voucher system is based on the idea that every parent would choose to send his or her child to the best school, if only it were affordable. Unfortunately, the voucher system ignores the reason private schools tend to provide a better education is that smaller schools with smaller students to teacher ratios can focus on education better than larger, overcrowded, administration-heavy schools can. While vouchers can result in a system of smaller, more focused schools, it's equally possible that they could result in larger corporate institutions whose focus is on the shareholder and not on the student. One need only look to managed health care to find examples of corporate profit-taking precedence over customer service. Doesn't it make more sense to face the problem head-on and work towards solving it directly? Why not work toward changing our public school model to one of smaller schools with more teachers and funding going to the classroom instead of the administration? Why not be clear about the educational objective, focusing on the development of human beings as a productive, contributing resource, living in a peaceful society rather than a product of a corporate gain? As a society, we should demand more from our educational system than a better employee. We need human beings who can manage their lives in a responsible way. Thank you.
Now we'll have 3 minutes of questions for our student panel.
Reverend Smith, many who support school choice legislation do so because they believe the public school system is beyond repair and no longer serves the needs of students. You obviously believe that the system can be reformed. Is there any way that public schools could deteriorate so much or anything could happen that you would be forced to support school choice legislation?
I don't see any thing that would force me to support vouchers. There is a need for reform. There is a need for more parental involvement. But I think we need to be clear about the educational focus of our schools. I think that's the real failing. We look to the corporate community to tell us what kind of product they need for employment, while the corporate community exports the jobs out of the country. And so there's something wrong with that scenario. We need to be more focused on the development of human beings to be productive in more ways than just in employment. There are other very important ways that we need to help people develop.
Currently, there in the Pittsburgh area or across Pennsylvania, there are very few, if any, schools that serve corporate interests directly that are for profit. Under your scenario, are you assuming that new schools would be created for profit, or are you assuming that the current schools would be created for that purpose?
I'm suggesting that a part of the problem of even public schools at present time is the tendency to look towards corporate interests to determine what curriculum to put in place and how to gear the education process. I think we should rethink that. We are at a time of great transition now, and we've come a long way in terms of technological advancement. We really need to look at how to restructure our society and restructure work and make education the kind of tool that will enable people to enjoy a better quality of life. And so it should be more than just preparing people for a job. It should be preparing people for a better way of life.
Okay, now we're going to move into the second stage of our debate, and that's the audience questions. So we have a standing mic that is set up there in the front of the room. And if you have a question for either side or a particular advocate on one of the sides, you can come up and ask your question. One thing I'll just request that you make it a one-time question, no follow-up, so that in the interest of getting more voices involved. And also, if you are directing it to a particular side, please identify that side. And if you're a specific advocate that you're interested in talking with, you can identify that advocate. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. My name is Jerry Boyer. I'm with the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. I want to thank Reverend Smith for quoting my favorite American political philosopher, Thomas Jefferson. My question is this. Are you aware that during Mr. Jefferson's political career, he was for a time the president of our capital's school district, and at that time that he regularly made appropriations of public dollars for parents to send their children to private religious schools, in other words, vouchers?
Absolutely. There's no doubt that during the formation of our country, there were a lot of wonderful ideas that were promoted. They were promoted by persons who were concerned about the protection of their privilege and their power. Unfortunately, all people were not included or not afforded the opportunities of those grand ideas. Fortunately, we are continuing to move towards hopefully a day when there is greater opportunity for all people and all interests would be protected under the wonderful ideas that were espoused by those persons who helped to initiate our public school system today.
We have a quick reply from the other side, about 60 seconds.
In 1779, it's true, Jefferson proposed a school system, number of schools around Virginia, for 3 years. But he also said once the state built the schools, they should be run by the parents, like Clinton's putting up front money for charter schools. But anybody who thought the state could run a school better than the parents didn't know what they were talking about, paraphrasing, and that the parents, in fact, should pay the tuition for the school for their students, and if they couldn't afford to, then the state would help them. You can look up the legislation, 1779, or the one place he spelled it out later in 1781 in Notes of Virginia. He wrote a long section. He did not believe in government-owned and operated schools.
Next question.
Okay, this is for the affirmative side. Before you all came up with the whole idea of school vouchers, did you look at every aspect or any other ideas? What about taking the money that you're going to put into the private schools and putting it into the public schools to better that system of education? That's what I want to know. Why don't you use that money to put it into the public schools and better that education there?
I'll respond at least in terms of what the administration's position is. As I said just a few moments ago, our approach on school choice and educational opportunity grounds for vouchers is that it should be a part of a lot of things we're doing. And if you look at the last several budgets submitted by this governor, look at the budget submitted and being discussed right now in the legislature, there is a substantial increase of new money for public education. And one thing we tried to do is make sure that we target some of that toward things like technology and academic standards and performance incentives. But when you add all the new money up, it's an increase of over 6.5% we recommend in this budget. So it's not as though we're saying don't increase public education money, give us vouchers. We're saying we need to step up and increase support for public education, but we also need to consider alternatives to that.
If I could...
let's have a 60-second response from the other side on that, if you want.
The question hasn't been answered, though. I mean, what's the intrinsic benefit of a voucher? If we're going to do other things, we all agree that we should do other things, but they have to prove that vouchers could improve education. So my question is kind of a point question is, what is it intrinsically that vouchers allow that would improve this package, this toolbox of which you speak, of educational reform? I'm trying to push the conversation.
Are we allowed to do that? Are we supposed to
sure? Does the other side, would you like a quick reply to that?
I think one of the arguments in favor of vouchers is that we're trying to challenge the system by empowering their clients, parents, and taxpayers. And that if we merely continue to fund the system, even in ways that we think represent statewide priorities like academic standards, the fact is that the system has been resistant to change, and as you pointed out just a few moments ago, is resistant to being progressive. And one way you have to change the system is to recognize human nature and try to harness the power of human nature, which comes out in academic in school vouchers.
Except that...
Let's have another question.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Lee. I'm a former school principal of the largest, one of the largest elementary schools in the city. And I have a question for you, Mr. Hickok.
Mm-hmm.
The real issue, particularly in inner city communities, is what will happen to those children who are left behind by these voucher systems? Where will they go? And what will happen to the public schools' continuous deterioration? I mean, I'd like to know, the wealthy and the elite have always been able to take care of themselves. What happens to the poorest of the poor when this voucher system is put in place?
Yeah, that's a very important question. And under the two proposals being discussed, one is a pilot, the other is the Academic Recovery Act, we have two different but we think related and important responses. Under the pilot, for the 5 years of the pilot, we would hold the school districts harmless on state money, which means as students might leave the Pittsburgh schools, Pittsburgh does not lose money that it gets from the state for those students leaving. That means, in essence, that Pittsburgh will have more money per student to spend, which is one of the arguments we hear all the time, that we need more money per student. Under the academic recovery proposal, we would also try to empower school districts by giving them new tools and new opportunities so they might be able to do things differently to respond to the unique challenges they have as urban school districts. So the goal here is to empower the districts to make sure they're funded well, but also to empower parents.
I mean, is there an interest in a response from the other side, quickly?
Yeah. Well, first of all, that protection of the districts only for, you know, up to like 5 years, and that ignores the fundamental point that you only have a certain voucher worth $700 to pick a school of your choice, an elementary school, and up to $1,000 for a high school, which ignores that most people won't ever have that voucher choice. And 80% of the people that will get choice under vouchers are already going to private schools. And so who is really benefiting from this choice at the same time that it ignores the fact that additional educational reform is not taking place. And what I guess I'm having difficulty saying this, but to institute a voucher plan and to prove that it's intrinsically beneficial in addition to public reform, they need to prove that competition is what is necessary in our educational reform. But there's no proof that they have that competition over time as a policy after these 5 years down the road will improve public education, especially for the people who are struggling now. And they haven't proven that. Unless they prove that, there's no way that they're improving quality education for everyone in Pennsylvania.
Next question. Hi, my name is George Wangell. I have a question actually for the opposition. First, I want to thank all the panelists for coming. It's been a very interesting debate. We were discussing the opportunity of the voucher system this evening, and you know, in listening to all the evidence and the facts that are stated, you know, I'm still kind of perplexed and confused on why an individual wouldn't want to give their, as a parent, why an individual wouldn't want to give their kids the opportunity to, say, go to a private institution which may benefit their education. And my question is basically, with this system and looking at systems that have happened in other states, why do you think that this is such a negative thing for the state to adopt in giving a parent the right to choose to send their school to a better institution for education?
My problem with it is that, and that's why I said something about the historical, try to give a historical perspective of how public policy gets shaped in this country. There's some foundational problems in our society that prompt policy changes in certain ways. And this is one of those attempts to affect public policy to help maintain status quo, the privilege that we need to be concerned about. We need to be concerned about every child in the Commonwealth and every child in this country, and to ensure that every child has a proper education. We already pay for education. Our tax dollars, we don't get free education. Our tax dollars pay in the present system for education. We should demand the present system be held accountable and to provide the kind of education that we expect from a private institution. That's my concern.
Why shift the burden when we've made such an investment already in the public system? We should do what's necessary, meet it head on, deal with the problem in the public system, correct it, to make it do what it's supposed to do.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, I think one more question.
I'd like to address this to the opposition. I regret to say that I am now old enough to have been around to have heard all this rhetoric before. I heard this rhetoric 10 years ago. I heard this rhetoric 20 years ago. I'm old enough to have heard this rhetoric 30 years ago. So it seems that the public schools have been in need of reform for 30 years, and 30 years later, the people who are supporting the public schools say, well, why don't you just let us reform ourselves and everything will be all right. I'm wondering why 30 years isn't long enough, and I'm also wondering exactly how you propose that the public schools shall be held accountable when the complaint has now existed for 30 years and the situation is worse.
If I might, for my slavery existed for 300 years, and the Civil Rights Act was only passed in 1965, the Voting Rights Act in 1965. We've come a long way. We still have not overcome or corrected past injustices. We have not corrected the structures that help to maintain and perpetuate some of the flaws that are within our system. I don't think it's going to be remedied overnight. It took us 400 to 500 years to get in the situation that we find ourselves in. It may take another 30 years to correct it, but we need to have the will to want to do that. And thus far, we have not committed ourselves to correct the past wrongs, the past, in my terms, the past sins, in order to get on with the future. And until we revisit the flawed foundation and correct it, we'll continue to have these kinds of debates.
And if I can just add one more.
That's an agreement with my position. The question is, how are you going to hold them accountable, given that so far you haven't been able to do it?
Well, there are many ways to hold people accountable. I mean, we should be arguing about how we can more equitably fund public schools. We should be arguing how to change to an income tax system, and the spaces of public schools are there to allow accountability. It's what people are doing to those spaces that erode them. And at this present time, in this day and time, it's like the other side is committing a fallacy. They're saying that what we need are private, select, precise individual choices, and that all of those individual market choices will add up to a collective public that will somehow help the public, but it's not like that. What we need is to have a bigger investment in the public right now and to come together and struggle against what has been hurting our public schools for so long, and that is a commitment, and that is accountability, and the space now does exist for that accountability.
That's $180,000.
All right. Now we're going to be really moving into the third part of the debate.
Thank you. Third part of the debate is the closing remarks, and I.